The uniform said bellhop, and the sprinkle of freckles plus Barn Cowlick said all-American boy. But the shifty eyes and the narrow mouth that slid over to the side of his face when he talked said something else, like racetrack tout.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to an eargasmic edition of the U.S. Racing Sports Gambling Show. I am your friendly host, Derek Simon, and this is the show where we talk about everything and anything related to the world of sports gambling, and a jam-packed show on tap today. Jessie McWhistle will join me in the I Need to Know segment. She is a proponent of the kind of training that Run Happy has been receiving. And I'm starting to see a trend here in horse racing, and I'm very pleased that more and more people are starting to apply a little science to it. So Jessie will talk about what she's been doing. Then, of course, Kevin Rogers of VegasInsider.com joins me to talk about the NFL playoffs and the national championship game. And it's all coming up in the I Need to Know segment.
I'm looking forward to completing your training. In time, you will call me Master.
All righty then. I learn it from a book.
I find this scientifically fascinating.
You're gonna remember this the rest of your life.
Oh, I already knew that.
I don't get it.
What part didn't you understand?
Will you never learn?
Tell you I can. Yes.
I'm now joined by Jessie McWhistle. First of all, I love that name. Is that your husband's name? Or I assume it's Irish, right?
It's funny that you ask. He's actually a nickname. It's something that I go by from childhood. But my name is Jessica Howell.
Okay.
Jessie McWhistle right. is it?
I love that, though. I mean, it's Jessie McWhistle. Hey, I wanted to talk to you because we have corresponded on Facebook, corresponded on social media, specifically after the Run Happy. I don't want to call it a debacle, but the Run Happy situation.
And, it was a debacle.
Well, I guess that's true. But the thing that you brought up that has always fascinated me about Run Happy is the training aspect. And Jessie, I don't know about you, but I have had so much trouble convincing people that the current training methods are possibly not the best. Or at the very least, they haven't progressed like we've seen in other sports. You obviously are into heart rate monitoring. You're into some of the things that the Run Happy team was doing. Why have you gotten into that, and how hard has it been to convince others that this is the way to go?
In my own experiences as being a runner, I've used heart rate monitoring to tell me, you know, exactly in a number form what it is I'm feeling my body tell me at the same time. It's very often that if I'm training and I feel fatigued or tired for any reason, I can look down at my heart rate monitor and it agrees with me. It will tell me exactly what I'm feeling. My heart rate will be elevated. My body will be doing more work than I feel like it should at any given pace, or distance type workout that I'm doing. And then at the same time, if I feel like a workout is not particularly challenging, whereas a few days before it was, I then can look at the heart rate monitor and it will tell me exactly the same story, same deal. I can look down and my heart rate will be not as elevated as before for exactly the same workout. And so I know that I've gained some fitness and I can add to my training and safely progress to do more work and be gaining fitness at the same time, as opposed to just doing the same workout every day and feeling like I had a good day or feeling like I had a bad day. Now I have a number to add to that picture that actually translates a little bit more definitely what I'm doing and what I'm getting out of what I'm doing. And so it's no different for horses. They're athletic creatures. They have the acquisition to get fitter and fitter with more and more exercise. And so that's pretty much exactly how it works in the horse world for us as well. I mean, the heart rate monitor tells us if a horse got something out of a workout and if they're ready to progress, or if by chance they got too much out of a workout and their body's feeling a little bit taxed and stressed. And we know based on a number that tells us more than, oh, he felt good today, he felt bad today. We have a number now that quantifies, you know, where a horse is at with any given workout on any given day. So it's a really helpful tool, especially when designing specific programs for specific horses. You don't have to rely on you know, wondering if he was just in a bad mood or wondering if, you know, it was just the weather or whatnot, you know, exactly where a horse is at any point in his training.
All right. I should mention, because I dropped the ball when I introduced you, you are a private trainer. You work for Charles Lopresti, also Mike Maker. But I'll tell you what drives me nuts, and I'm going to come across here very, very poorly, but I don't know any other way to put this. But I remember when I did a fitness challenge and I had all kinds of people giving me advice. Derek, you just don't eat fruits. Or actually, no, they didn't say that. You can eat all the fruits you want. You can eat. No, I can't. Trust me. And I'll often see people that are in nowhere near anything resembling good shape, talking about fitness things. And that's the thing that just gets me. It's like, it doesn't make any sense. Again, we talked a little bit about, you know, how you get this across to people. How do you, in a delicate way, so you don't come across as a jerk like I just did?
That's one of the conundrums, I think, of horse racing, is that you don't have to look like someone who could get up there and do it themselves to actually make it as a trainer, because there's 100,000 ways to skin a cat. Like, there's 100,000 ways to train a racehorse. And a lot of times I feel like these horses are kind of winning on their own merit. If you'll notice, I mean, without being too, like you say, harsh of a critic, a lot of these trainers at the top are all winning at pretty much the same percentage. And in my experience, it's because their training methods are pretty much the same. And so, you know, when you're dealing with these guys, they're a difficult sell on the fitness aspect of things, because they pretty much are of the mindset that they're doing as much as possible. And to be honest, a lot of these top trainers are looking for ways to do less with the horses and still come out with the same result. Whereas my program is almost the polar opposite. I'm always waiting for the horse to tell me he's ready for more. Because on a few other platforms that I'm sure we'll get to, I feel like the horses are just underprepared physically for the task of racing. But it is, I mean, it's, you know, fitness isn't really a question that they ask so much in these top stables. I mean, they don't feel like there's an opportunity for the horse to do more without hurting themselves. And like I said, same deal. I feel the complete opposite. And that's the point I'm at with things, where I feel like, you know, a horse is a fluid structure. I mean, the bone will remodel to accommodate stress. And so that's, you know, that's kind of the platform that this increased fitness operation that Run Happy adheres to, and my horses as well, is that you ask more of the body at a slow enough pace that it's given time to remodel, and it does just that. It becomes stronger with more and more and more exercise.
Absolutely. In fact, on social media just this morning, a guy talked about, you know, thoroughbred training being more of an art than a science. And if there's one thing that drives me nuts,
that, yeah.
it's statements like that, because they're nonsensical. And no offense to this guy, but, you know, this idea that it's some, you know, what are we doing? Are we channeling somebody? Are we channeling the great spirit to tell us? And unfortunately, that's a part of it, because I heard in wake of the Run Happy thing about, well, Run Happy's never going to run again because he lost the love of his life. It's like,
that is
the most absurd thing, you know. One of the other challenges I think you face in racing, and I wish this weren't true, but I think being a woman, this is a sport, unfortunately, it's one of the things. As much as I love horse racing and I love the sport, there are aspects of it that I just don't like at all. And that's one thing I've seen in racing, conditions on the backstretch being another. But how is it for you as a woman trying to convince some of these old Kentucky blue bloods that they should hire you?
Well, on a couple of fronts, it's more difficult, definitely. And back to the guy you had said, mentioning an art rather than a science. On some levels, I'm not going to, not one to the exclusion of the other, but, you know, horses are living, breathing creatures. They aren't machines.
Sure.
And there is an element of art and or horsemanship, whichever you want to call it, that comes into play. But like you have mentioned before, and like we've agreed, you know, together on social media before, that, you know, with the science added to the art, if you will, of horsemanship, that you just have so much more information to work with, and human athletics have come leaps and bounds. All of the times on every race from sprint to marathon have improved drastically over the course of time with the use of scientific intervention. And horse racing hasn't. I mean, we have yet to break Secretariat's record for the Belmont. I mean, and some people say it will never be done, but I say it will. I say it'll be replicated, and I say it will be broken, but not until this is more accepted. I mean, that's how human athletics have progressed, and that's the only way horses are going to progress past that horse, which was a freak of nature. But he's not the only horse that could do that time. But anyway, as far as being a woman in the industry, it's a two-faced dilemma. I mean, you definitely deal with sexism, but it's not overt, I would say. I think part of the reason is a lot of times, you know, these trainers and owners can develop, you know, a sort of camaraderie relationship. I mean, like, you know, they go and play golf and they go and you know, hang out together and whatnot behind the scenes. And I think that's just a little bit less acceptable for a woman in my perspective to participate in. I mean, I don't go play golf with the trainers. I don't have that kind of chummy relationship with the owners that way. And so it's, you know, it's different, but it's not impossible. There's plenty of people who have a preference for women because they see, you know, a connection that you know, a lot of women have a sensitivity, if you will, that women have for horses that sometimes men don't have. I don't find it to be an impossible task. It's difficult. I mean, you get patted on the head sometimes and told, you know, have fun at Pony Club type deal. But on the whole, I don't find it to be anywhere near impossible. I mean, you know, everybody deals with their hurdles, and how you deal with them, you know, just kind of determines people's reaction from you from that point forward. So I haven't had a terrible run of things simply because of being a chick.
that's good to hear. It's your name. I'm telling you, it's the McWhistle. But it's good to hear. And I do agree with you too that, you know, I like that you take that perspective that sometimes it's really not so much sexism as it is kind of an old boys club, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, you know, if I'm hiring for a business, I'm going to probably hire my brother first because I know him. I trust him. So, you know, I think that's part of it. Hey, I want to talk a little bit about the horses that you are specifically training now. You mentioned one on social media. I've promptly forgotten the name, which is typical of me with names. But tell me a little bit about your horses and what we can expect in the upcoming year.
Well, the horse, oddly enough, it's going to sound funny on paper, that I'm most excited about right now. He has a little bit of history. He's actually found himself at the 6,500 claimer level at Gulfstream Park last year. And this is a horse that I've been following his career as he kind of pilfered down through the ranks. He started, he broke his maiden for 30,000 at Saratoga, and just kind of drifted through the claiming ranks down to where he was running at the bottom at Gulfstream. And he's an older gelding by Broken Bow out of a Holy Bull mare. So first off, I pick on pedigree. I like to look for horses that I feel like have some of that old good stamina blood, that you can absolutely still find here in the USA. But this horse in particular, his mentality struck me as I watched him over a couple of years' time. And so I through a serendipitous turn of events, was able to acquire him last winter. And though he be older, he's a very sound horse, and he's been, you know, a very hard campaigner. He always shows up in the afternoon. So my husband and I took him last winter and took him straight to the farm and gave him kind of the R&R that he probably hasn't experienced since he was a young horse, because he's been such a stellar campaigner. So we started with some time at the farm with him and have gradually brought him back through. It's a very long process, and I think that's part of the reason that a lot of modern day trainers kind of shy away from this type, because it does require a broader base of fitness. There's none of this 90-day wonder from the farm to the gate, you know, turnaround time. I mean, you do have to lay down some pretty heavy mileage and background work before you can have a horse that's, you know, physically and mentally sound and stable enough to undergo an increased workload like you're going to be asking for once the heart rate monitor starts telling you you can't, because the body processes model or remodel at different rates. I mean, you can get a horse wind fit and, you know, in 3 weeks, but that doesn't mean his bones and joints have remodeled to the point where they're going to be able to withstand an increased workload. But he's a cool horse. He's 7. He actually just turned 8 years old. His name is Willie Pay. And he's in the process now of beginning we do interval training with our horses, just like all of the human athletes that win at top levels do. He has a base mileage galloping. That means his everyday gallop is 3 to 4 miles right now, at a steady pace, and on his workout days, depending on what his heart rate monitor tells us and depending on what kind of a race we'll be gearing up for, he does intervals of 2 3-quarter mile workouts, or he will do 3 5/8 mile workouts, and it's all in one morning, you know, and these are at racing speeds, and some, at least the last one is, and they go increasing in speed as we decrease in distance. So it's an interesting process, but I've taken a couple of horses through this program. I've made some mistakes with some horses, and it is a learning process. I mean, like anything else, because it's not charted territory necessarily for horses at this point, the way it is for humans. But this horse is really taken to training. He's, to be honest, he's asking for more mileage at this point. His heart rate monitor is telling us he's ready for more mileage, but we want to get him to the races. And so at some point you do have to stop increasing the workload, and you do begin a taper process to bring a horse into peak racing fitness. I mean, a lot of the trainers fail who have tried this methodology because they don't employ a proper taper. I mean, if you're constantly upping the ante into a race, you do end up with an animal that is kind of like a squeezed out lemon. But there is a taper process involved, where you start kind of taking the workload away, and that animal then builds a head of steam, and you head into a race with a horse who's beyond fit for what he's going to be asked to do on race day. Like, my horses come back from the races wondering when the next heat starts, you know. So a race day is actually an easy day for a horse that has come through a full-blown program with us.
That's a great point, because I do think there's some give and take between conditioning and then just being, you know, ready to go. You can't, absolutely. I mean, I noticed just from working out, from lifting in particular, if I'm lifting all the time, typically I'm going to be tired and more sore. If I was competing in something, especially a strength contest, got to give myself some days off. Anyway, right. I thank you so much, Jesse, and it's good to hear that Mr. McWhistle is involved in the programs as well. I want to thank you for coming on the show, and I hope you have all kinds of success.
All right. Thanks so much, Derek. Take care.
Looking for some action? Well, if it's sports and casino action you're after, USRacing.com has got you covered. At USRacing.com, you can get the latest betting lines on pro and college football, basketball, and all the MLB and NHL action, too. Heck, you can even get the latest odds on the presidential race, the Academy Awards, or who's going to be the next James Bond. Clue, it's probably not going to be P. Diddy, but he's on the list of betting options. And if you're a racing fan like me, you'll love the daily menu and special prop bets. Thoroughbred Racing, check. International Racing, check. Greyhound Racing, check. Harness Racing, check. Generous Rebates, checkmate. USRacing.com also has a wide variety of casino games as well. So if you're looking for some sports and casino action, look no further than USRacing.com, the place that's setting the pace.
Now, here's why you can win.
Every time you lose, you die a little bit. You die inside, a portion of you. Not all of your organs, maybe just your liver.
In our business, there is no second place. Either you're first or you're last.
You sick, saucy.
When you walk in that door on your two legs all fat and cocky,
you, me, or nobody. He's gonna hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward.
See that? That's your IQ, buddy. Zero.
If you look at this play, what we're trying to get is a seal here and a seal here and try to run this play in the alley.
Remember, we do everything in reps. So you have 2 reps of water drinking. Usually we do 10 reps of everything, so do another rep of water drinking.
I am joined, as I am every week, by Kevin Rogers of VegasInsider.com. How are you doing this morning, Kevin?
Derek, I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well, but I got to tell you, I'm so curious about the NFL playoffs and handicapping games of this nature because, you know, we always talk about different games and who's got motivation, who doesn't have motivation. Well, when the NFL playoffs hit, these college bowl games, all that kind of stuff, there's always the motivation. Is the handicapping different for you?
A little bit. I guess you could change the sports around, because if you look at the NBA playoffs and a best of seven series, obviously you can look back at the previous matchup and it's still the same two teams. When you look at this with the NFL playoffs, obviously you're going to have a different matchup every single week. So in a sense, you're kind of like, it's like you're handicapping the regular season in a way. And I don't really think it changes that much. I mean, when you look at this weekend's games, you have three of the four matchups rematches from the regular season. Obviously, Pittsburgh and Cincinnati played twice. Seattle just beat down Minnesota last month. And the Chiefs played the Texans way back in week one. So you have all these different kind of storylines and situations that are completely different with all of these teams. So I think it's very hard, even if people want to go to that angle of saying, well, Seattle just beat Minnesota, they should beat them again, or the Chiefs beat the Texans back in week one. I feel like these are different teams now after all this time. And really, when you throw the playoff factor into it, I mean, we've seen teams that maybe don't have big-name quarterbacks that have won a few playoff games, or teams with big-name coaches that lose early. So I think a lot of people, Derek, want to put special emphasis on certain teams or certain names and saying, well, the Packers have to win. They have Aaron Rodgers. He's won a Super Bowl. Well, what does that have to do with anything? He won a Super Bowl a few years ago, but, you know, it's a new season now. So I just think that a lot of people put in all these crazy factors and maybe are overanalyzing these games.
I think that's what's so intriguing to me, Kevin, is because, first of all, I've heard, you know, momentum. Oh, you got to be on a roll. You know, the Seahawks are on a roll right now. Yeah, but if you look at the stats, that apparently doesn't matter that much. Then, of course, there's the previous matchups. And, of course, I bring up Seattle because I'm from Seattle. I'm a Seattle fan, also like Denver. But when I look at this matchup with Minnesota, I don't look at this like it's going to be another 38-7 game. In fact, I did some research here that might help you out, Kevin. It might just thoroughly confuse the situation. I've heard all week about the cold weather and how this is an advantage for Minnesota. It slows down the game. Well, I looked at Pro Football Reference and I looked at games at 10 degrees or less, and I ignored zero values because in a lot of cases, they just didn't have temperatures recorded. In the 25 games at 10 degrees or less, and these are, of course, are all games from 1940 to 2015. Don't know how complete Pro Football Reference's database is, but the home team has covered in 17 of 25 of those games, won outright 14 of 25. Do you think that's a factor, the weather?
I think it depends on what kind of teams you have that you're dealing with. Now, obviously, the Minnesota Vikings for a very long time played indoors. So this is almost new for them playing outdoors. And I don't really care that it is Minnesota when you're used, when Adrian Peterson for all those years played in the Metrodome, and now all of a sudden he's playing his first playoff game outdoors, or at least at home outdoors. I think it is a factor in this, or the same thing you look at Seattle, where Seattle plays in kind of crappy weather, but they don't really play in freezing weather. That there's a difference there. You know, I think that's what it has to do with. I mean, you know, we've seen, I remember years ago, Derek, when the Falcons played the Packers at Lambeau and Michael Vick was making, I believe, his first playoff appearance. Oh, Michael Vick's going to the Colts. He's playing in the Georgia Dome. The Falcons destroyed the Packers in that game, and it was a wild card game. I think it was 2002 or 2003. And you said, well, how does that make any sense? He beat Brett Favre, who never loses in the cold. And I think that, again, another factor that could be a little too scrutinized in a sense, because we know that Teddy Bridgewater is not really going to change a lot of his game in the snow, and maybe it'll benefit him. And granted, he's a kid from South Florida, so I don't know if he's really, you know, this weather, how much it's going to affect him. It's going to be a different experience for him. And you look at Russell Wilson, I don't think Russell Wilson is going to be necessarily affected by the weather, but it is a factor. But at the same time, you know, it always goes back to that old theory of both teams have to deal with it. So, you know, I don't think that one team is necessarily going to be affected more than the other.
I think that's always been my point with this, Kevin. And we can't quantify. You know, I was just talking to a friend of mine about some financial issues. And I said, you know, so many people concentrate on what's going on in China or what's going on here and there. And that's all great. But if you can't quantify that, if you can't say why that affects your stock or why weather affects this game or this person, it's really kind of a moot point. So with all that said, I just want to talk a little bit about the handicapping part. What do you got for this week?
Well, obviously, Derek, when you have four road teams that are expected to win, we don't see that often in the NFL, and I'll isolate a few of the games for you. One of them I want to look at is that AFC North rematch between Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. And both these teams, a little bit in playoff drought. The Bengals haven't won a playoff game since 1990, so it's been a while. And everyone talks about, oh, Marvin Lewis has never won a playoff game. Is he on the hot seat? I think it's ridiculous he's on the hot seat, because now you get to this point of the season, you did your job. And they're without their starting quarterback, and they turn to A.J. McCarron, who we know isn't Andy Dalton, but at the same time, it's not the worst thing in the world that Andy Dalton isn't playing here. That if A.J. McCarron can just limit the mistakes we've seen in the past, we've seen, and granted, I know he doesn't have the experience of a Trent Dilfer or Brad Johnson. As long as you know, we saw those guys win Super Bowls. Granted, they had great defenses, but if you see a guy like this making his playoff debut, if he can just limit the mistakes, he had the Broncos beat on that Monday night and they ended up losing. He won two other games, so we know he's very capable of running this offense. You still have A.J. Green. They're still pretty good players defensively. But there's a lot of talent on that Cincinnati team. And you look at Pittsburgh, where the Steelers, it goes back to that reputation thing. They have Ben Roethlisberger. They've won a Super Bowl. But this is a team, you look back at it, the last road playoff game they played, who did they face? An inexperienced quarterback in Tim Tebow, and he beat them on the road in overtime. So it's not as easy to say, oh, well, the Steelers are going to go in and roll the Bengals. And it's like I mentioned with that Seattle-Minnesota game, that Seattle just beat them bad in Minnesota. People are thinking about that, and they have that fresh in their mind. Same thing with the Steelers when they beat the Bengals last month. Andy Dalton got hurt. The Steelers destroyed them. You're telling me that same exact effort's going to happen again on Saturday, where now the Bengals have A.J. McCarron. He can prepare for the game. He's not thrown into the fire out of nowhere. I just think that the Bengals, to get them as a short home underdog here, I think it's pretty good value against the Steelers.
Very good. In fact, Cincinnati, a 3-point underdog against the Steelers. Where are we going to next?
We'll go to Sunday and the Green Bay-Washington game. And obviously, huge toss-up between these two teams. And, you know, there are arguments to be made on both sides. First, with Green Bay, that you look at some of their road losses. They've lost to 15-1 Carolina. They've lost to 12-4 Denver on the road. Those are not shameful losses by any stretch, but also in those games, I think Aaron Rodgers had 70-something yards passing against the Broncos, and against Carolina, they got down big before rallying at the end to make the game close. Green Bay really didn't play well down the stretch, and I don't buy into, well, they lost to Minnesota, so they could draw Washington. This is a Redskins team that's playing pretty well right now and has some confidence. They've won four in a row. I understand that they have not beaten a team with a winning record all year. That's fine. But if you go back, I'm not comparing the talent on these teams, but if you go back to that Arizona Cardinal team that lost to the Steelers in the Super Bowl with Kurt Warner, that Arizona team didn't beat a lot of good teams that year either, and they got to the Super Bowl somehow. So I'm not making that leap, but I'm just saying that don't take too much into that. Washington played very well at home this year. I know they got tripped up by Dallas. They had a comeback against Tampa, but they had some pretty good wins in the underdog role. And Kirk Cousins is playing very well in the final half of the season. Washington, a very underrated place to play as far as, you know, when you think about toughest stadiums. Redskins do have a nice little home field advantage there at FedEx Field. I just believe that this team right now, it is kind of a nothing to lose mentality, where for Green Bay, this was a team that was playing very well. They were undefeated 7 games into the season, and they've pretty much fallen apart over the last couple of months playing 500 football, and the pressure is on them after getting to the NFC Championship last year. So I'm going to lean towards Washington there at home against Green Bay.
How do you take a Green Bay team, Kevin? I mean, I watched their last game and I thought they looked terrible, but you know, as I said to start off this segment, we've seen teams that have somehow got it together in the playoffs. Do you think that's possible for Green Bay, or are they as bad as they looked last week?
That's always the million-dollar question is, you know, teams like Green Bay with a Super Bowl-winning quarterback, Pittsburgh with a Super Bowl-winning quarterback, these teams that have to win 3 games on the road, and we know Aaron Rodgers has done that in the past. We know Ben Roethlisberger has done that in the past. But, you know, now you have a different you know, it's a different mindset in a way where with Green Bay that if you snuck into the playoffs or, all right, you're a 10-6 team, now look out for us. It's a major disappointment how they ended things. So obviously this can go one of two ways where you look at it and say, okay, Green Bay is going to get it together over the next few weeks and make it to the Super Bowl or make it to the NFC Championship because, you know, they have that talent and now they can just turn it on, or they're going to fall flat against Washington. I'm going to lean more towards option B, where I think that they can really fall flat, that, you know, this is a very tall hill to climb for them, that when you look at Green Bay, depending on, you know, how things go, you would have Arizona or Carolina, two teams you've lost to already on the road that are waiting for you in the next round. But this is not going to be easy for them. And then going to Washington in this first wild card game, that Washington really feels good about themselves. And this was a team, and I'll tell you this straight out there, this was a team I had no faith in, absolutely no faith in this season, and I'm not alone in that. And they played very well, and you know what? They probably found their quarterback in Kirk Cousins, that it didn't work with RG3. Kirk Cousins is their guy, and getting that home game, we've seen these teams. We've seen the Seahawks beat the Saints at home, and granted, they were a huge underdog. You know, we've seen it where, all right, we're disrespected, but we can beat this team. Why not? And I think Washington's got a great shot.
Yeah, you talk about the fortunes of two teams just reversing. I mean, Green Bay was a Super Bowl favorite, everybody talking about them, and then just horrible down the stretch, very much like New England, 2-4. Hey, Kevin, I can't let you go without talking a little bit about one of my other teams, the Denver Broncos, and what's going on in Denver with the quarterback situation. Who starts that first playoff game? Is it going to be Peyton Manning or is it going to be Brock? And what impact does that have?
Well, we're seeing the reports that it's going to be Peyton Manning, that he's going to start that first game for Brock Osweiler. And obviously Peyton helped them beat the Chargers in week 17 to grab the home field advantage. And at this point, it just basically comes down to if Peyton can be healthy enough where he can get through these games and, you know, hope the defense can hold up as well. And you know what? It's the storyline of the playoffs. You know, we've had, oh, Carolina's 15-1. What would happen? Brady, what would happen? All of a sudden, Peyton and the Broncos has just jumped all of those other storylines where we get to the second week of the playoffs to see what the Broncos will do. You can't tell me people aren't interested to see. And I think there's a lot of people that are probably rooting at least for Peyton to get to the Super Bowl. I don't know about win the championship, but at least get there to that point to say, wow, you know, Peyton had a horrible season. He was hurt. He was done probably. And then he comes back and plays in the playoffs and maybe takes the Broncos to the Super Bowl. That storyline will be very intriguing over the next few weeks.
It sure has been debated here in Denver. In fact, what would be funny is to see Peyton go to the Super Bowl and then Brock start in the Super Bowl. You know, just really switch people up there. But, yeah, it's definitely been a hot topic here in Denver. Hey, Kevin, thanks as always. You have any college bowl games, anything like that to look at? How many do we have left? Like one?
Well, we got one left. We're down to the end. And I actually really like Clemson in the national championship on Monday, and I'll tell you quickly why. That Alabama, in their last five bowl games, they've blown out their opponents. All right, they played very well in those games. We saw that against Michigan State in the semifinal in Dallas. I kind of feel like, Nick Saban's great, and we know that he's going to always motivate his team, blah, blah, blah. But coming off that win, 38-0, where they played pretty flawlessly, now you're playing a Clemson team. You got to bring back that energy against a better team than Michigan State, a much better and more mobile quarterback in Deshaun Watson, and a Clemson team that is very motivated 14-0 because they were an underdog against Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl, and they put up an impressive performance, scoring 37 points and holding Oklahoma's powerful offense to 17. And now they get to face Alabama where, you know, they probably do feel a bit disrespected. It's hard to pass up 7 points with a 14-0 team. So I do like Clemson on Monday night in the national championship.
Sounds good. Thanks, as always, Kevin.
You got it, Derek.
Looking for some action? Well, if it's sports and casino action you're after, USRacing.com has got you covered. At USRacing.com, you can get the latest betting lines on pro and college football, basketball, and all the MLB and NHL action, too. Heck, you can even get the latest odds in the presidential race, the Academy Awards, for who's going to be the next James Bond. So if you're looking for some sports and casino action, look no further than USRacing.com, the place that's setting the pace.
That's all we've got time for today. I want to thank my guests, Jesse McWhistle and Kevin Rogers. I want to thank all of you for listening, and I hope you have a great weekend of wagering. Take care. Talk to you again next week.